For too many of us, it's become safer to retreat into our own bubbles, whether in our neighborhoods or on college campuses or places of worship, or especially our social media feeds. Surrounded by people who look like us and share the same political outlook and never challenge our assumptions. And increasingly, we become so secure in our bubbles that we start accepting only information, whether it's true or not, that fits our opinions, instead of basing our opinions on the evidence that is out there. In the course of a healthy debate, we prioritize different goals and the different means of reaching them. But without some common baseline of facts, without a willingness to admit new information and concede that your opponent might be making a fair point, if you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
It'd be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm balling, I'm stunting. Be too easy chasing the fame, playing the game. It'll be too easy, but tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and as usual, I am here with my co-host, Kent Strait. What's up, Kent?
No, I don't want your number. No, I don't want to give you mine. No.
Oh, hey, we started.
We did.
We started. Hey, okay. How are you?
All right. That was not the musical number I thought you would start with. I thought it would be something from Hamilton, but
nope.
Okay, cool.
Nope.
We're starting with No Scrubs.
I don't have enough self-confidence to rap.
Anytime I hear No Scrubs, I always think of the rebuttal track, No Chickens, which was equally hilarious. It was a response from guys back to the girls.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, basically. One of the best. Google it. Mm-hmm. Find it on YouTube. I'm sure you can find No Scrubs and then No Chicken Heads.
Okay.
So, anyhow. So, this week we have no guests, which means it is a... Wildcard Wednesday.
A.K.A. the Everybody Canceled Show.
Everybody Canceled Show. Yeah. We were supposed to do an episode on bullying, which I think this is like the third time the bullying episode has gotten pushed. So
I'm
just thinking.
I remember getting pushed before.
It did.
I remember food justice getting pushed.
Food justice is still very pushed.
Okay.
It's almost canceled at this point. It's like dead on arrival.
Okay.
But you don't always look at, I've got like a little notebook at home where I schedule out everything.
Yeah.
And so you don't see the ones that get pushed all around the schedule. And so this one got pushed because.
About three times a year, my email fills up with, Calvin has 20 new topics.
Yeah, 20 new topics. It's, yeah, they get bounced around every now and again. But this week, our panelists had to cancel. We didn't have that many. But I think. So one person got invited to a big event that only happens once a year. So I understood that. And then, of course, the other two people. Their parents, and of course they want to talk about bullying, and the school year has just launched, and so I think parents are still kind of getting their wits about them in terms of figuring out schedules, work schedules, getting kids picked up. One kid is sick at home all day, those kinds of things. So
I still want to do the bullying show.
The what?
I still want to do the bullying show.
Okay.
But I will tell you why I'm not absolutely heartbroken I got pushed.
Okay.
Because it's one of those topics that you can't find anybody in favor of it. So there'd be a lot of agreement.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of agreement, but I also, and this is a spoiler alert, but I grew up in the day and age where you've got people from my day and age, and I'm only 38, who are like, man, you know, when I was a kid, bullying toughened you up. And I've had those conversations. Now, of course, when I was a kid, bullying didn't follow you home.
Right.
Other than on a bike, once you got home, you were safe. But now it follows you on the internet and things like that.
My personality, as it were, it's been very identifiable for anyone who knows me today, who has known me my entire adult life. My personality exists because of bullying, and I like my personality now than I did before. It's better than the one I had as a child. Because that one was more boring.
See, you're basically saying there's value.
I'm not going to say I'm tougher. I'm tougher psychologically, I guess.
I would say that I am as well.
Okay.
I would say it's funny. I remember, and it made me very quick on my feet. There are a lot of people who will tell me, I can't come in. Calvin, I love listening to your show. You guys are so funny. You have so many great people on the show. But, I feel like you ask these questions, and I can tell which ones are written and which ones just kind of come spur of the moment based on what someone's asked. and I can't think as fast as other people. Mm-hmm. And I think bullying taught me how to do that. Case in point, there was a story from when I was in high school. I remember there was this girl. Her name was Lisa Wolfram. And I had a crush on her. And she was dating this guy named Mike. Can't remember Mike's last name. Michael Curry. Michael Curry was part of this group called the Fab Five at our school. Not the Michigan Fab Five, but that's
what they
were
basing it off of. And I'm assuming not the Michael Curry who went on to play for and coach the Pistons.
No.
Okay.
No. But either way, he was part of this popular group. They called themselves the Fab Five because Michigan had the Fab Five at that time with Chris Webber and a few other people, right? And
that's ballsy.
Yeah, so I got to the school, and they were the five starters for our basketball team.
Okay.
And I remember really having this crush on his girlfriend. But, you know, obviously I wasn't going to mess with that. But one day I got caught. It was a gym class, and I got caught staring. I got caught staring at his girlfriend. And all those guys came over. Mike didn't see it. And so, like, the other four out of the five came running over to me like, Hey, Calvin, why are you looking at his girlfriend? Why are you looking at Mike's girlfriend? Huh? Huh? And then Mike came over like, yeah, why are you looking at my girlfriend? What's going on? And I was like, I guess if you got a good thing, you got a good thing. And Mike was like, yeah, he's got a point, guys. He's got to go. So,
well done.
That's a very good answer. I got nothing for it. So, I think bullying in that respect made me think quick on my feet. But bullying is.
Why are you looking at my girlfriend? Why wouldn't I?
Yeah. I mean, shouldn't everybody?
Yeah.
But let's just say that bullying, when we were in school, is a far cry from what bullying is now. And I'd like to get into that quite a bit. When we actually do the topic. But either way, because our guests aren't here this week, we are doing a Wild Card Wednesday. We've done these the last couple seasons. And so basically kind of a hodgepodge. And both Kent and I have a number of topics that we're going to be kind of ping-ponging back and forth through. And Kent, we'll let you go ahead and do the first story since it's just you and me.
Let me smear fecal material all over Black Lives Matter.
Okay,
because I know
that is probably not a good way to start a show with me as the host. All right,
it's not okay.
You liked my Black Lives Matter photo that I just took the other day, which by the way was a baller photo.
What photo was it?
I took a picture outside of a mural that all it says is Black Lives Matter in a bunch of different size fonts. It's really, really cool. It's on the side of a building in downtown Detroit.
It's not that I don't like that. It's that I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember seeing it.
You were just going through on a liking spree.
Right. So this is a story taking place in, of all places, Charlottesville, Virginia, where and I understand, by the way, when we talk about Black Lives Matter, I understand way better than a lot of our guests, not all of our guests certainly, but a lot of our guests, that Black Lives Matter has no hierarchy. There is no president of the club, but there's no Cobra Commander.
Correct. There's no centralized leadership.
Right. So it's a bunch of – so it's a group of protesters identifying themselves with Black Lives Matter.
Correct.
Who did this. So –
which is generally what gets attacked, by the way.
Sure. Yes. Right. Exactly.
Well, this is the leader. It's decentralized leadership.
Nope.
So
this is the leader. Yeah. Let me see how I can about 100 students at UVA.
Okay.
Faculty and community members. The story's already getting worse because it's not really Black Lives Matter. But the point is about 100 students, faculty and community members, some invoking Black Lives Matter chants, showed up at the Charlottesville, Virginia University and placed a black tarp on a monument honoring Thomas Jefferson, a U.S. founding father and founder of the university.
Of the university, yes.
Here's the problem. I think Thomas Jefferson's an a-hole, too. I don't like Thomas Jefferson, if for no other reason, because he was the primary antagonist in Hamilton. Okay? But
I'm glad that that's what you're basing it on.
Sure. Okay.
He's the bad guy in the play that you love.
He's the bad guy in the play I like. Okay, but I don't...
That's why I hate Gaston. I mean, someone came along and was like Gaston, I mean, I'd just be like, I hate him because he's the primary bad guy.
And a well-known historical figure.
Yes,
Gaston.
Very well-known.
It is well known by history that no one spits like Gaston. No. Okay. So
no one's hair is as incredibly thick as Gaston.
As Gaston.
Right.
Here's the problem with putting a tarp on Thomas Jefferson, because it is exactly what Donald Trump said was next. So when he gives that awful, awful speech at which he says there's a that there were fine people on both sides, both with and against the neo-Nazis, What are we going to do? We are erasing history. What's next? Are we tearing down monuments to Thomas Jefferson? Thomas Jefferson can't be your very next move, guys. It can't be the next thing you do.
Now, here's the thing. Okay, so I agree and disagree with you on this.
Okay.
So when a Trump comes along and says, what's next, the slippery slope argument, even if it does come to fruition, that's generally intellectually lazy. It's not one that I really pay too much attention to. It's like same thing. Black people and white people getting married. What's next? Men marrying men? That was the argument, right? Now we have men marrying men, right? And you can agree or disagree
Although
on whether that's
case,
okay or not.
It did take 30 years.
Doesn't matter. It was still next.
3 weeks.
It was still the next group that got to marry, right? So that to me is not necessarily a valid argument. And there are valid reasons to not like Thomas Jefferson. There are valid reasons to tear down some of his monuments. That being said, and now we differentiate between a Washington and a Jefferson, for
sure. Yes.
Because he's a founding father, it's so much more troublesome. It's so much more troublesome than a Robert E. Lee, because, you know, Robert E. Lee led the Confederate soldiers. Kind of a no-brainer between the two as to which one gets to stay and which one doesn't.
And I think in case there was any misunderstanding on the point, I know I don't need to say this, but probably don't need to say it to the audience, but what I've said to everybody on Facebook or Twitter who asks what is the difference, we are honoring Jefferson in spite of his slavery, because of the other accomplishments, whereas the Lee statues are up explicitly because of the slavery.
Essentially, yes. And as a direct response to black people getting the vote in the 60s. But the reason, at UVA specifically, the reason why I have an issue, and this has actually been a long time coming, there are people who have gone to that university for years who have said that they wanted monuments of Jefferson taken down because of his history of slave owning. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, hold on, you got into UVA, which isn't it's not necessarily your eighth pick, right? It wasn't way down the list for you to go to.
I
wouldn't think so. Right?
Good school.
So, yeah, it's a fairly good school. Going to the school, you chose to go to UVA. You got accepted. I'm assuming you probably got accepted to other schools as well. And you are now at this university, and you were calling, and this is me specifically calling out students at the school, specifically calling out faculty as well, I guess. You were working at or attending a school, accepted enrollment at a school that was founded by this person that you're now protesting. I feel like that is a waste of time. I feel like at that point, you should have just gone somewhere else. If it's that much of a problem, why go to the university? Why go to the university at all if you don't like the person who started the university and everything that he stood for? And you know that there are going to be monuments there.
Go to Duke. You probably got in there, too.
Probably. I mean,
you know, it's...
But, yeah, it's one of those hard things, especially for me as a historian. There are times, I mean, Robert E. Lee is a lot easier for me because despite the fact that he was gentlemanly, and I've read plenty of biographies on him, I just bought a biography on the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis. These are gentlemanly people, but at the same time, they were horrendous.
I think there is a continuum. I think there's a continuum even within the Confederacy. While not liking Robert E. Lee, I like him more than Stonewall Jackson.
Oh, sure.
And I like Stonewall Jackson more than Jefferson Davis. So there's a slope even within the Confederacy.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I guess just because all three of them are on the wrong side of history, it's easy to lump them all in the same. There's not a sliding scale for most people. But most people are also uneducated on the particulars of the Civil War, which is interesting to me. Because I come from a place when I say, yeah, that monument should be torn down because I understand when monuments went up, why they went up, and, what they represented at the time they went up and what they represented at the time they lived. So for me, I'm coming from a space of a historian. Some people are just like, hey, look, they were racist, they owned slaves, tear it all down, which is problematic for me as a historian as much as I disagree with what people did, what they said, what they stood for. I don't think there's a loss to history necessarily because we have this thing called books and the internet where you can find pretty much any information you want on any of these people. I don't think if you tear down a Robert E. Lee statue, you're going to all of a sudden lose the fact that Robert E. Lee was a historical figure and person who actually lived. But I do take issue with people just having a very simplistic view about the things that should be removed from the public eye.
Did I ever tell you that I was once the owner of a Confederate battle flag that was authentic to the Civil War.
No, you didn't.
Mostly because I just remembered it.
Okay. What happened to this flag?
I was the owner of a Confederate. It was at the bottom of a trunk of – I found it at the bottom – in high school. Okay. Found it at the bottom of a trunk of, you know, knickknacks and whatever, you know, super old stuff that I had gotten when my great-grandmother died. I was 10 when she died. I went through the trunk at like 16. So, tells you how important it was to me.
Yeah.
Loved Mamaw, but...
Did you call her Memoir?
Mamaw.
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 Instead of Mama?
Mamaw is the most used word for grandma in the South.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mine was Nana.
Nana's big everywhere, I think. Mamaw is an old, an old Southern
term. Yeah, sounded Southern.
Southern. And so, Mamaw died when I was 10. And she was 90 in 1980, and so it was her grandfather, I believe. So my great-great-great-grandfather, who was a Confederate soldier. And so she had gotten a flag of his and kept it with her stuff. And so when she died, whatever. So I found it, and that was at a time when I was starting to become very socially aware. I didn't know it was authentic when I set it on fire.
Ah, well, I'm still liking how the story ended. Happy ending to the story, everybody.
So I set it on fire, and when I will admit, when I found out it was authentic to 1864, I was like, it's kind of unfortunate. I mean,
and here I am. See, I'm saying it's a happy ending. Because it is a happy ending.
Yeah.
That's what should have happened. I think Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee basically said it should never be flown and never be seen anywhere again.
Okay.
But at the same time, the historian in me is like, that could have been in a museum. Or, you know, the crass side of me could have been like, you could have made a lot of money off that thing. What a waste of money.
I mean, I'll tell you what, I would, if I had the choice now, I would be more prone, because I do associate these two flags together. I would be more prone to set on fire a flag of the Third Reich.
Oh, of course.
Than
Not
one
the
of
Second
the,
Reich.
Than the one of the a Nazi flag. Right. Than one of the American Confederacy. Not to differentiate between the causes, but because one is super, super old. But anyway, okay. So.
I do wonder about that because people say things like, you know, okay, you know, the Civil War was so long ago, get over it. Slavery was so long ago, get over it. And nobody ever says that to Jewish people. Like, the Holocaust was so long ago.
75 years ago. It's time to move on.
Yeah, and nobody says that. That nobody looks at the third, you know, the swastika and goes, well, that's not what it means to me, right? that's not what it means to me. For me, it's German pride, and I came from Germany, and my grandpa was born at that time. And so part of me wonders how many years away we have to get from the Holocaust where people will start flying that bad boy like they fly the Confederate flag
their ancestors.
That's my fear. It's like
I was reading something
– 40 years from now, that'll be a thing.
Oh, yeah. I was reading something, you know, when the flag was pardon the pun, hot – when that debate was hot again, like 3 weeks ago, and
opening old wounds,
and it said, "Can we take our example from the Germans who have banned ownership and public display of this flag? And this is a flag that not only, this is the flag that was for a 10-year period or so." This was not a flag of a political party. It was the flag of Germany.
Yeah.
It was the German flag, and it was flown by their grandparents. These are people that they knew and loved, as opposed to, like I said, I had a Confederate who was my great-great-great-grandfather. Wouldn't you think you would be more prone to want to honor people that you knew than people who are a hazy relic that you care nothing about? And it shows you it's not about honoring your ancestors.
No, it's not at all. But moving on.
Yep.
Let's so much more I could say on that. But So we're going to talk a little bit about politics a few times tonight. Not that what we just said didn't have political implications. But as of today, Bernie Sanders' new Medicare for All bill has been announced. It's pretty much dead on arrival. It's not going to go anywhere. But this Medicare for All bill, he's got nearly a third of the Senate Democratic caucus on his side.
He had like 17 co-sponsors.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is in 2013 when he sponsored this bill, it was him alone. He stood alone. It was just him. And it was definitely going to go nowhere at that point. And now he's got 17 people on his side. It's still going to be – it's still dead in the water.
Sure.
It's not going to go anywhere. But it is – picking up steam, and I'd like to say that this is just symbolic. We know that it's not going to go anywhere, but the fact that Bernie Sanders is able to move the needle and get that many people on board, even for a lost cause, is to me kind of exciting. It's kind of telling also about who the current leader is of the Democratic Party, as far as I can understand. I do believe that that's Bernie Sanders. Now, of course, we are still 3 years out from the next – well, I mean, if we go based on the last election cycle, we're 6 weeks out from the next election cycle, the 2020 election cycle.
I do not think Bernie Sanders is going to be president, because I think his age is something of a brick wall.
I think that as well, but I think that he is currently the leadership. He has a lot more power than he did before.
But his ideas,
and I think that his words,
his ideas are the driving force.
Yes, his ideas are the driving force. So because of the power that he has, and because of the ideas that he has, I think that will influence whoever is going to run next on that particular ticket. Because the Democratic Party absolutely has to do something to regain the voters that didn't vote for Hillary. That were on the fence, and you know what we talked about last week, what 12% voted for Hillary Clinton, right?
Voted for Trump.
For Trump.
Yeah,
they were, and Kelly was very succinct on that when she was on the Why I'm Liberal episode, where she said, "Look, these people were on the fence altogether. They were never going to vote for Hillary. They were always going to vote for the outsider.
They wanted to blow it up,
yeah,
as opposed to vote for liberal policies.
Yeah, but if anything, the fact that this Medicare for All bill was announced today is fairly interesting, but. I'm going to read something from CNN Politics, this little excerpt that I found interesting. Under Sanders' proposal, Americans would receive a universal Medicare card that would be a ticket to a comprehensive healthcare services, including hospital stays, doctor visits, substance abuse treatment, dental, vision, and reproductive care, including abortion. So this is, and as I read the story, and maybe I don't know enough about it, but as far as I understood, the government does not fund abortions at this point, as far as I understand.
A subject of debate on this very show just a couple of weeks ago.
We did have that. But this is very interesting in that, one, CNN, that was just kind of a throwaway line, including abortion.
Yep.
Moving on. This is DOA, but given the fact that Bernie Sanders does have a lot of clout, given the fact that 17 people are on board with this, even though it's dead in the water, he's kind of the de facto leader of the Democratic Party right now. His words will have influence on whoever becomes the next Democratic president, whenever that happens. This kind of thing is a moving of the needle. So it's kind of interesting to me to see whether the government will start in some way funding abortions. Now, there are a lot of conservatives who say that they already do because of funding Planned Parenthood. We can agree to disagree. We could see what all their money goes towards. But this is kind of interesting that it's just out in the open at this point. This would be, as far as I can understand, this would be government-funded abortions.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about the morality of it. It's just kind of a changing of the guard in a way.
If
I understand it correctly.
Sure. What a Democratic partisan would tell you. I mean, I think in all fairness to her, what Kelly would say, if she were here, is that the official stance of the U.S. government for 40, going on 47 years, is that abortion is a medical procedure. It is legal and protected by the Constitution. It is your right to obtain one, and why your medical coverage shouldn't cover it is lost on me.
True, true, but whenever a conservative says, oh, the government funds abortions,
yeah,
the retort is the government does not fund abortions.
Right.
Right. This is a changing of the
guard.
That would
be crossing that bridge. Yes.
Absolutely. So Kind of interesting. Obviously, this is a fairly partisan bill. It's, again, dead in the water with the Republican majority.
It's important because if you look at who the co-sponsors are, and certainly you've got more co-sponsors than fit into this next category. But if you look at who the co-sponsors are, it's the senators who are going to be vying for the presidential spot.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's a litmus test. And as Hillary Clinton can tell you, your voting record in the Senate lives forever. And she was taking knocks in 2016 for her vote to authorize the Iraq War in 2003. And someday the votes of Kamala Harris and Amy Klobuchar and whoever – those are just two I can think off the top of my head – are their votes on Bernie Sanders' bill are going to matter.
And I wonder to what degree, because getting into a – what people would say, endless war. We're still in that war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, getting into an endless war, not finding weapons of mass destruction.
Nope.
That the public was told about. I still like. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm like, would I be happy if I found out that Saddam Hussein had a bunch of weapons of mass destruction and we just narrowly, you know, escaped being killed? I would not tell anybody that either. But
yeah.
So as far as I understand, we didn't find it. As far as the official story goes. Which is the true story as well, because I'm not committed to conspiracy theories. There were no weapons of mass destruction. I can understand why that would be harmful, you know, to your career in 2016 when you're running for president.
Mm-hmm.
A Kamala Harris voting on something that is dead in the water is just an ideological hit, which you can step away from. You can, you know what? 16 years ago when I voted on that, that's how I felt. I've had a lot more time in government. I've seen what's worked, what doesn't work. And so since that never even came to fruition, I wonder how much weight that would carry because, hey, that didn't come to fruition. But then I did all these other votes, and here's another healthcare bill that I voted on. I wonder if she'll take knocks on something that actually passes. So that's just one name out of the many because that's the one that I that you mentioned and the one that I recognize the most. So moving on. Next story, Kent.
Oh, am I up next?
You're up.
Well, see, I got to choose one.
You got to choose one.
I find this one hard to believe. It's a little lighter, and we can move right past it. This is what's known in the business as filler while you get your next hard-hitting story ready.
Actually, I'm not going to go with the hard-hitting one next either.
Okay. 4 in 10 American adults still sleep with a teddy bear? Can that possibly
be
true?
Wait, 4 in 10?
4 in 10 adult Americans still sleep with a teddy bear?
I feel like that's not true.
I feel like that's high.
I feel like that's almost 50% of people.
Well, precisely 40%, but yes.
Almost 50 sounds so much better, right?
Now, all right, here's my only caveat. Who would take a poll on this? How could we possibly have data on this? This is a poll conducted by Build-A-Bear.
Oh, see, I'm feeling like this is like something that's bandied about the TMZ newsroom. Like, hey, let's do a survey.
I think the sample size feed, was probably higher than that. Let's see.
Wait, hold on. That means that they're probably – Build-A-Bear is more than likely – polling the parents of children who they are building bears for.
Well,
so
maybe
it makes if you got 4 kids and you buy 4 bears, like 100% of your kids, they're American, right?
Well, sure,
right. So if you're counting kids, it seems likely.
This says that, and I will.
It's going to be skewed.
I will quote from the article.
The survey is probably taken in a Build-A-Bear.
Well, so. It's kind of like those signs you see outside every those signs you see up outside. Pizza places that said voted number one in Metro Detroit. Right?
Wait, is there a guy like spitting an arrow and dancing?
Well, no, voted number one in Metro Detroit.
That guy's got energy.
You know, Hungry Howie's voted number one in Metro Detroit. I always look for the fine print way in little black font at the bottom. It says as asked of people leaving Hungry Howie. I guess. I mean, it's never there, but I feel like it should be. The popular custom teddy bear outlet Build-A-Bear Workshop commissioned a new survey. With over 2,000 Americans, which is a huge sample size, to gauge their views on furry friends and came away with surprising findings. More than half of the survey participants indicated they currently owned a stuffed animal, and 40% indicated the toy joins them at bedtime, which may or may not involve sleep. What? Perhaps most
way to make a story dirty about Build-A-Bear.
Perhaps most surprisingly, most of the plush toys out there are no spring chickens, 56% of those polled say that they've held on to their favorite stuffed animal from childhood for at least 20 years.
Okay, so when did this story come out?
Yesterday.
Okay, so here's the deal. A year ago, Build-A-Bear was exploring strategic alternatives for profit plummets. Okay, so...
Profit plummets?
Yeah, they were losing money.
Okay.
They're hemorrhaging. So they closed a bunch of stores.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So I think...
I've never been in one, but
well, they're fantastic. They're really cool. It's the bear is way more expensive than it should be. By the way, the teddy bear got its name because Teddy Roosevelt, when he was president, was
killed
on
the bear.
Hunting trip. No, he refused to kill the cub.
That's right.
And so they started calling it a teddy bear. But either way, so Build-A-Bear is a fairly interesting experience. You go in and you pay more money than the bear is worth, but the kids get to pick different animals now. It started off as bears, but now you can do anything. Like they got like giraffes, they got like kangaroos, and you can fill it up so that you can fill it up with the stuffing because it's basically just like this floppy piece of fabric that's shaped like an animal. Mm-hmm. And then you can fill it up so it's soft so you don't put a lot of filling in it, or you can fill it up so it's like a hard little pillow. And then you can buy different clothes for your animal, which is interesting.
You can pick the eyes. And you
right.
Can,
if anybody know, can tell, I have a child, right?
Okay.
So I took my daughter there when she was 6 or 7. I'm pretty sure she still has all her stuffed animals in the top bunk of her bed.
Okay.
That being said, they have been hemorrhaging money and losing money because people aren't going to malls as much. And Build-A-Bear is definitely a mall experience where you're building the bear yourself. It's not as much fun to order it online.
No, absolutely not.
So you have that going on. So people aren't visiting malls already. So they're closing down a lot of stores. So I'm wondering if a survey like this is like a last ditch effort. Like four in 10 people have a teddy bear. Why don't I have a teddy bear?
And when
my kid doesn't have a teddy bear.
When you mentioned your daughter, it made me wonder. Of these 2,000 people, I would like to see maybe an age breakdown. Because your daughter, who you say still has all her stuffed animals in the top bunk, is 3 years away from adulthood and very well may, on the day she turns 18, still have those stuffed animals.
Probably.
So if anybody at the mall asked, hey, do you still have a stuffed animal from your childhood, which was yesterday, why, yes, I do.
I will tell you that when I was in college, there were a lot of women that I talked to. I never thought to ask guys. It seems kind of sexist, but either way. There were a lot of girls that I knew who picked one or two of their stuffed animals from their stuffed animal collection at home to take with them to college. I don't know. Now, see, now I feel like I should text my daughter on Snapchat and see if she still sleeps with a stuffed animal or not.
You're going to text your daughter on Snapchat?
Because here's the deal about this, okay? I was texting
her. Why don't
you
just tweet to her on Vimeo?
Just shut up.
Okay,
so my daughter is great, all right? But she just turned 15.
Yeah.
And I remember either earlier this year or late last year, I was texting her, and I pay for her phone, right?
Right.
She lives with her mother, but I pay for her phone, and you know, thanks, Justin, for outing me on that last week, right? So I'm paying for her phone, and texting is free at this point, right? So I text her, and she just wouldn't respond. And I called her mom, or I texted her mom, and I said, have you grounded her? Did you take her phone away? Because sometimes it's a punishment. You take a kid's phone away.
Right.
But it's my only means of getting a hold of her, generally speaking.
Okay.
So
you can't call?
Nobody has a home phone, and her mom and stepdad don't really answer. But I don't want to get all too personal. But
yeah.
Either way. So I'm texting her. So I text her mom and said, she's not answering. What's going on? Oh, she only responds on Snapchat. I'm like, wait, so she's getting the text messages.
She's getting the notifications.
She's getting the notifications, but she's choosing to ignore them unless they come through on Snapchat. And because she's 15, I'm kind of allowing this self-determination at this point. It was funny. The moment I started texting her on Snapchat, the responses are very quick. She just does not respond on regular text message. She will text me on regular text message if she needs something. But by and large, if I'm texting her, she will not respond unless it is on Snapchat.
That may be the first time that I've ever had this visceral reaction to a teens are different story.
They
right?
are.
Because I always thought, well, you know, they're younger, less finished versions of adults. No, that's different.
Yeah, totally different. But moving on.
Yeah.
So going back to politics, Hillary Clinton has a new book out called What Happened? And so Justin Imers was on last week and the week before. And he – no.
One week ago and 3 weeks
ago. Yeah, and 3 weeks ago. Yeah. But he has turned me on to listening to Ben Shapiro. And the reason why I'm listening to Ben Shapiro is because as a liberal and as the host of this show, I feel that it is very good to hear differing voices. It helps me understand where the other side is coming from. It helps me craft the questions for the show. And so I have to take him with a grain of salt. It's a little bit hard to listen to him sometimes. But
he's a little whiny, isn't he?
He is. He definitely has a nasally voice. But he doesn't have a strong male voice that I have. Not that and we'll be talking about masculinity next week. So maybe I should step back on that. But either way, so I've been listening to some of the stuff that he says. And some stuff makes sense. Some stuff I'm like, okay, I can see what you're leaving out and why you're doing that because you have a conservative party line to toe. But he had this funny joke. He said, so Hillary Clinton's new book came out, and her book is called What Happened? And then the answer is right at the bottom. It says Hillary Rodham Clinton. That's what happened. I thought it was hilarious. Like, zing, that's hilarious. But I will give Shapiro and basically the Twitterverse this. Hillary Clinton in the book What Happened is essentially all the good things that happened she takes credit for. The decimation of her her political campaign and her political career, in a way, she blames on everyone else. James Comey is one of them. Vladimir Putin, of course, for his meddling, even goes on to blame Barack Obama. The media, Matt Lauer, just took her to task on live TV a few days ago saying, you were pretty hard on me in this book.
Barack Obama?
Yep.
She blames Barack Obama?
Yep. Bernie Sanders. Let me go back up. Quote, I do wonder sometimes what would have happened if President Obama had made a televised address to the nation in the fall of 2006, warning that our democracy was under attack.
Well, he wasn't president in the fall of 2006, so I don't know.
2016.
Oh, okay.
Maybe more Americans would have woken up to the threat in time, so she's kind of
that is a
responding.
Mistake. I do think that was a mistake.
That Obama
that,
didn't do that?
That they knew that there was a Russian cyber incursion, and they decided to not go public with it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, fair enough. It's still someone she blamed.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
The media, of course. I just said Matt Lauer, Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders have been up in arms for the last week and a half.
Yep.
Jill Stein.
Well, I kind of blame Jill Stein too.
There were more than enough Stein voters to swing the result, just like Ralph Nader did in Florida and New Hampshire in 2000. Sexism, of course, she blames. A white resentment is out there. And she does finally blame herself. She said, you can blame the data, blame the message, blame anything you want, but I was a candidate. It was my campaign. Those were my decisions. So ultimately, the buck does kind of stop with her, as the old presidential saying goes. But before she gets to saying that, look, it was partially my fault. She blamed everybody in their mind.
You know who she didn't blame, who she honestly could have blamed?
She did blame Trump.
Oh, sure. You know who she could have blamed and she didn't blame that I'm aware of because I haven't read the book? Is it out?
Yeah.
Is it in stores?
Yeah, it's at Barnes & Noble right now.
I do intend to pick it up.
Which is the only bookstore I know of at this point. I'm sure there are like some mom and pop stores, but Barnes & Noble is it.
13 Mile in Southfield, for our Detroit listeners, there is a former Borders location called Books-A-Million.
Oh, that's still owned by Borders. Who's it owned by now?
Is it? It's Books-A-Million.
Books-A-Million was a Borders subsidiary.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, there's a Books-A-Million at 13 in
Southfield. Okay, well, cool. All right.
Assuming it's still open. She could have blamed, having nothing to do with musicals, she could have blamed James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, the proponents of a little quirk in the Constitution called the Electoral College.
Ah, yeah.
Because she got 2.86 million more votes than the winner. So,
yeah, she did win the popular vote.
She did.
But apparently it doesn't matter how popular you are.
It does not matter.
Because the Electoral College is like, sit down, lady.
Could have won it by 10 million votes. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I don't think that would have been possible. Could you win by 10 million votes and still lose?
It's theoretically possible.
Like, no.
Sure. I mean,
you can win by 10 million votes and lose the Electoral College?
Well, if you get like every vote in California.
Then there's no way if you get every vote in California, you'll lose California's electoral vote.
No, you won't. But she won California by like 25 points. But
oh,
if she'd won
you're
California
the
by,
wrong.
Like, 45 points, okay, she would have gotten the same number of electoral votes.
Yeah, right, you're putting the puzzle together wrong. Yeah. Got it. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so I think now's the time to take a good break.
A good break.
Good break. 10 minutes, and we will be back. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for waiting on the line for us. We are back for the second half of Wildcard Wednesday. And
the Everybody Canceled show.
Everybody canceled. Nobody here. Nobody knows. nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to eat some worms. So the next story that I'm going to talk about, let's see if I can get this pulled up. I should have had this done before we came back from the break. But the story we're going to be looking at today or now is hedonism may be good for your health.
Okay.
And the headline caught my attention because, you know, I grew up in, you know, a relatively conservative background where I was told to kill the flesh, put death to the flesh, to be self-sacrificial,
sure.
To not be selfish, all these kinds of things. And so the idea that hedonism might be good for your health just kind of stuck out to me. And, of course, my first thought upon reading the headline, which, of course, is sensational, is this is how far gone our culture is. And we've had people on the show where we talk about different styles of relationship, which is very clearly based in hedonism. And that the popular view of hedonism is to maximize pleasure,
mm-hmm.
right? Maximize pleasure and to minimize pain. And as I was reading through this article on CNN, it was fairly interesting because it was far less about being selfish and more about the state of things as they are. I mean, let's be honest. In a way, all of us are hedonists.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is why we feel guilty. I mean, when I was, you know, Christian growing up, I mean, not that I'm not a Christian now, but when I was growing up, the missionary kids would show up for like Missionary Sunday and they'd all be weirdly dressed alike and they'd be talking about all the sacrifices that they were doing in some war-torn country in the Middle East or in Africa, right? And you always felt bad because you had all these different things. Or you would go on a mission trip and you would see people in abject poverty. Like I went on a mission trip to Mexico and I came back and I was like, I have an iPod! No! For like a week, right? I felt super, super guilty about having these things. And so that kind of came from this view of sacrificing everything to the flesh. But this idea of hedonism, maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain, that seems to be a basic view that most of us hold. Right? Most of us, the reason why we find stories of people who are self-sacrificial so heroic is because none of us want to do it. None of us really mm-hmm. want to do those kinds of things. I'm always surprised. I have a friend, Sherry Wellman, who's been on this show, who's talking about going down and alleviating hurt and pain and some of the physical issues that are going on right now because of Hurricane Irma. So she's going to go down there with a team.
So you know, single-handedly?
Not single-handedly, but she's going down with a team. She's leading a team.
Right.
Right? I'm not the kind of person that would say, hey, you know what? I'm going to spend a week of my time mm-hmm. and I'm going to go down to Florida and I'm going to cut trees off of power lines so the power team, you know, the electrical teams can get in there and fix everything. I'm not the person that's going to get in a boat and rescue people. I'm just not that kind of person. I'm the kind of guy who the iPhone X was just announced. The iPhone 8 and 8 Plus were just announced. And I'm trying to figure out how I can get the money to get that next big item. I want to maximize pleasure and minimize pain.
You know they'll charge you by the month, right? You don't have to pay for
it. I know that they will charge you by the month. I know you can buy every phone new at this point. And I love that plan, by the way. But I'm on Sprint, so it's going to still work like crap, regardless of what I get.
1%. Okay.
But the article was interesting in that it differentiated hedonism from debauchery.
Yep.
Because when we think hedonism, we think debauchery, just out there doing crazy things.
Right.
But this article talks about finding joy, essentially finding joy in the little things. And so I almost wonder if they're misusing the word hedonism for contentment because they're like, you know, do you find joy in running through the fallen leaves in the fall? That's hedonism. I'm like, I don't know if that's a hedonism. I mean, it would be hedonism if that's all you did all the time. Like, I don't want to pay my bills, so I'm just going to run through the leaves all the
time.
That
doesn't even sound halfway entertaining to me.
Some people love that kind of stuff. But it's almost like a it's almost like a stopping to smell the rose.
Yeah,
or the roses.
Yeah.
You know, take pleasure in the small things in life, whether it's a culture that we see these adult coloring books now. And some people say, well, you know, adults just don't want to grow up. Why do we have adult coloring books?
My mother, super into adult coloring books.
People find pleasure in it. I find pleasure in crossword puzzles.
Yeah. I have a crossword app on my iPad, which is doubly
hedonistic. What app do you use?
It's called Crosswords with Friends.
I have it too. It's so great. Yeah. I do every day at 10 it comes on.
Okay.
And it's funny. I could be in the middle of a conversation with my wife.
Stop. I got to take 4 minutes.
Yeah,
to do this
just
puzzle.
Let me do right, this. Yeah. And I'm always trying to beat my record. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who's doing that game.
What's your record?
I don't even know. I'd have to go back and look.
I'm like at 320.
But here's the deal about Crosswords with Friends.
Yeah.
I don't think you can play it with friends.
That's the thing. I have a niece who's barely younger than Mackenzie, who she's very into Words with Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I discovered Crosswords with Friends, I sent her a link to an invitation from Crosswords
mm-hmm.
with Friends.
And it gave you a bunch of coins?
And it gave me some coins. And then I realized I can't find the interactive part of this game.
There is no interactive
part
of the game. All absolutely right. Not. It's just made by the same people.
Okay.
And I think it was a miscast on the name.
Yep.
It's like mislabeling of the name there.
I was envisioning like doing puzzles together. That's like,
yeah.
Like cooperating.
Like you do
in
up,
a puzzle.
They do down, whatever.
Right. And
it is totally alone.
However, as I have done several puzzles, I realized that I'm almost kind of glad that there is no interactive part because these puzzles are easy enough that I wouldn't want to waste my time for doing them with somebody else.
Have you ever done one though, where you're like, I think this is the one. I think this is the one that I'm not going to be able to solve.
Nope.
Not yet. Okay. There have been a few where I'm like,
there have been a couple of hard answers.
Know. But yesterday, because of this game, and it's funny, it was solitaire before this game. And then I started playing Words with Friends. I'll play Words with Friends every now and again when somebody mentions it. Oh, I'm on Words with Friends and this person's really good at it. Right? Okay, so I'll start playing it and then I'll stop. Well, this last time it had an advertisement for Crosswords with Friends. I was like, oh, well, great. I'll play that game. We'll see what it's like. And every day it's been great and I play it every single day. And what it caused me to do yesterday, I was at Barnes & Noble. I'm walking around. Sir, is there anything you're looking for? I'm like, no, not really. Just going for the bargain price books. And then as I'm going through the bargain price books, I see a bargain priced crossword puzzle book.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. I thumbed through it. I was like, no, this is way too hard.
Yeah.
I need games that I can beat. So same thing with the video games. I will play them on easy because
sure.
I'm the story guy. I want to know how the story goes.
I used to do like the USA Today crossword mm-hmm. puzzle every day.
I did too.
And then because I was down under like 10 minutes every time. And
ooh,
then, you know,
that's nice.
Every time. And then a few months ago, I thought, you know, I do this puzzle every day. Let's take it up a notch. I'm gonna check out the New York Times crossword puzzle. And I looked at it one time, and it was like, oh hell no, I can't do that.
Big mistake.
Oh
huge.
No,
yeah,
this is terrible.
They get progressively worse throughout the week. But last night I was at Barnes & Noble. Looking at bargain price books, found a crossword puzzle that was bargain price but too difficult. So I went to the desk and said, hey, you know, do you have crossword puzzles? And they said, well, they've moved. Which I don't know why they say this kind of thing. Like, maybe you think I'm a regular customer who knows where everything is. I'm like, hey, where are the Bibles now? They were over here and now they're over. They've recently moved. I'm like, but I didn't know where they were in the first place. So this is where they will have always been. So go to crossword puzzles, look through them, grab a book. Also bought a crossword puzzle dictionary, which I don't know is any different than an actual dictionary. it doesn't have definitions. It's mostly synonyms. So it's a thesaurus, essentially. And on Facebook last night, I took a picture of the crossword puzzle book, and I said, tonight's going to be lit. And I put the three little fires behind it, which just basically said I was a 50-year-old man.
I was thinking, that's really old.
But my friend photo commented what she was doing for her lit night, and it was cross-stitching. I was like, you know you're old when you buy a bunch of history books and crossword puzzles.
I first got into,
for your evening of
fun. I first got into Words with Friends for the first time, and it lasted about a year. I've not played in a long time. But I first got into Words with Friends when a girl that I liked very, very much said, we should play Words with Friends. And I was like, all right, I'm all over that. This was like 2010. 2009 or 2010. And she was constantly dominant in Words with Friends. And the weird thing is,
I know a guy who's like that as well.
Oh, yeah. She was just ass-kickingly great at Words at Words with Friends. Now, here's the funny thing. Very, very pretty. I wouldn't have said she was the sharpest tool in the shed. So I think she found a way to cheat at Words with Friends.
Oh.
Because she was creating words that I could barely hear.
I don't know how you do it. Google it right now. You know, words for Words with Friends.
Okay.
There's all sorts of stuff like that.
All right. Well,
absolutely easy to find.
Props to you.
Your turn for a story.
Speaking of clearing debris, did you hear about the nun with the chainsaw?
Nope.
Across the state of Florida and up into Georgia and South Carolina, images of first responders have become a welcome sight amid the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. But among the usual uniforms, those of police, firefighters, and paramedics, a nun's habit stands out. So it was a viral story they heard on that was all over the news, depending on what news outlets you were watching, with a nun in, and I don't mean like a nun who's a nurse in a local Catholic hospital where she's wearing wearing scrubs and a little cross pin. I'm talking about a full bore, full habit, long black robe, like wardrobe from The Sound of Music nun. And she's wielding a chainsaw and she's cutting up fallen trees. And there's a picture here. It doesn't do it justice, but the thought I had when I first saw it was, the hills are alive.
But this
mofo tree's getting chopped up today.
Raindrops on roses. And whiskers on kittens.
Yeah, it says she's a 30-year education veteran from Archbishop Coleman Carroll High School in West Kendall, Florida. Sister Margaret Ann knew of a chainsaw in her school's closet. She thought nothing of ripping into a down tree, blocking a road.
Okay.
So good for you, sister.
Okay. Interesting. The hills are alive. With the sound of chainsaws. Yeah. I feel like The Sound of Music would have been much different if the nun had had a chainsaw. Like the Nazis.
Yeah.
The Nazis would have been like, I don't know.
Right.
Do we really need this family? Do we really need the Von Trapp family? Do we? No.
For the story to work? Yeah.
No, I'm just wondering if they would have tried as hard to keep them if they had a chainsaw wielding nun.
Oh, you're talking about the Nazis.
Yeah, yeah.
How bad do we need the Von Trapps?
How bad do we need this family?
No.
Can we just let them go? I mean, they're gonna have to climb through the mountains. They may not even survive.
It turns out Mrs. Von Trapp's got a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Well. We can call it.
It's a good game, guys. Good game. Good game. Good try. Yeah, it's the effort that you put in, guys.
Yes.
Here's a participation trophy. So, and other light news. So there's I'm a big fan of Star Trek, and apparently there's a new series coming out. Before I get to Star Trek, there is a new Star Trek spoof on Fox called The Orville.
Here's what I heard about The Orville. I heard it was obviously inspired by Star Trek, but that the previews were misleading. It makes you think it's a Star Trek spoof, and then they go and give you like a serious show.
No. Well, let's put it this way.
Okay.
It is what Star Trek would be if regular-ass people were staffing the starship. Like, so they, like, something comes on screen, and it's a bad guy talking. No, it's a doctor talking. He's like, hey, we need your help. And the captain's like, okay, we'll send an away team down.
Yep.
And the two guys who are like manning the helm, one looks at the other and is like, did you see the dog licking his balls in the background? I was like, first thing I saw, man. So, okay. I mean, it's like a lot of one-liners. Like,
how do they
zingers.
Get through Starfleet Academy?
Yeah, and the captain in the very first scene catches his wife cheating with a blue alien, much like Captain Kirk would do. And it's like right at the moment of climax.
So to speak.
And apparently this alien climaxes through his face, and like this blue ink comes out of his face. It's very crass. It's think Family Guy meets a lighter Family Guy meets Star Trek is okay. Essentially what it is. So there's a lot of one-liners. It's fairly funny. It's a mix between Star Trek,
Family Guy,
and maybe Firefly. So it is guaranteed that Fox will cancel it. So because it's funny. But yeah, it's a little bit more serious than I thought it would be, but it's not a serious show. It's a comedy. Okay. Either way, that's a good show. But there's another show coming out on CBS's All Access
app, Network, yeah,
which is total BS, by the way. But Star Trek Discovery is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to, just as Gene Roddenberry did when he released the original Star Trek series, trying to call into question societal norms, what would it look like in a utopian society. And so he bases different characters off of different people in the real world. Well, that is happening in the newest show, and the showrunner says that current events have influenced the series. However, they have had to come out and say that the Klingon characters in the show are not influenced. The warrior-like race, if you don't know Star Trek, Klingons are a warrior race that want to fight everybody. They had to come out and say that they are not influenced by Trump voters. So I found that interesting that they had to come out and make a statement that even though these characters, you'll probably see a lot of Trump voting tendencies in these characters, are totally not Trump voters.
I would
That's
like
not
to get
the allegory. It's like saying Aslan right. is not Jesus.
No,
he is not a
I
Jesus
would like
lion.
To get a, I really want to get a red trucker cap made that says. So that,
sorry.
You weren't even listening.
No.
You weren't listening. You missed the best joke I've made all day.
It was a good joke. Here's the deal.
Okay.
I have my computer up for the stories that we're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
And text messaging comes up as well. And,
yeah.
And I just got a text message from my wife, and she's upset with me. So,
oh.
Yeah. That'll make any guy.
How do you get text messages to your PC? I get it.
It's a Mac, so everything.
Oh, it's a Mac. Oh, never mind. Okay.
Yeah. So my iPad, my iPhone.
Oh, I get
my
it.
Watch,
it's a Mac.
My
yeah.
it all. Well, you could do the same thing if you're an Android.
Okay.
On Android as well, which is neither here nor there. So next story for you.
Speaking of Star Trek ripoffs, Star Wars Episode VII: The Force Awakens. Speaking of Star Wars ripoffs, Star Trek, Star Wars Episode VII, The Force Awakens, a movie I liked very much.
It was good. It really was just a rehash.
Right. I liked it very much. And the person responsible for Star Wars Episode VII, The Force Awakens, who stepped out of the director's chair into a producing capacity on Star Wars Episode VIII, The Last Jedi, to be released in December.
Mm-hmm. Excited about that.
J.J. Abrams, or Jeffrey Abrams for the true fans who remember him from Felicity and Armageddon.
Oh, did he go by Jeffrey back then?
I never
knew what the first J was.
If you look up the screenwriting credits on Bruce Willis's and Michael Bay's Armageddon, you'll see that the screenplay was by Jeffrey Abrams. That is the same person.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
So anyway, J.J. Abrams, who has directed many fine episodes of television and
including Lost
and several good movies, one episode of Lost. J.J. Abrams is returning to the director's chair to direct Episode 9, titled "We Don't Have a Title Yet," and he is replacing Colin Trevorrow, who was unceremoniously fired.
Ooh, why was he fired?
I mean, they haven't said. They said that. I mean, the official line, of course, is that he and Kathy Kennedy, the producer, had competing creative visions for the project. What I have heard is that their relationship became unworkable because after Carrie Fisher died, they had to completely redo their plans for the story, and he was finding it very hard to get a handle on what the story should be.
Okay.
And it just ruined his reputation with the higher ups at Disney.
Okay.
So Abrams is back. Movie's going to be fine. Colin Trevorrow is not – I mean, some would refer to him as a hack, but it's not like he had no experience. He did direct Jurassic World, which is like the fourth highest
grossing movie ever. I enjoyed that. So, I enjoyed that.
But he's gone.
Okay.
And
you win some, you lose some, right?
You win some, you lose some. Sometimes you lose the best job you ever had because Carrie Fisher dies.
Ooh.
I mean,
would that have made it good for him, though?
That is a ridiculously specific example. Sometimes you lose the best job you ever had because Carrie Fisher dies.
Oh, that's so sad.
In less
happy news.
Yeah, less happy. Okay.
Well, I mean, losing a job compared to what I'm about to talk about.
Sure.
So I don't know if you heard this story, but an 8-year-old biracial boy's family has claimed that a group of white teens attempted to hang him. I don't know if you saw this story.
No.
Yeah, it was in Claremont, New Hampshire. It was in at the end of August, so August 28th, according to the story that I'm reading here. So August 28th. An 8-year-old boy was attacked by a bunch of 14-year-old boys. They tied a rope from a nearby rope swing around his neck, put the kid on a table, and kicked the kid off the table. He swung back and forth 3 or 4 times before he was able to extricate himself.
How old did you say the boys were?
They were 14.
Okay.
They were 14. According to the story, their identities have not been released.
Uh-huh.
And... So the boy had lacerations along his neck. It's pretty, you can Google this. It's pretty graphic. If you don't have a strong constitution, I would definitely refrain from looking at that. But not that's not a problem in and of itself.
Big problem.
Obviously, hanging people is horrible. But the Claremont police chief, Mark Chase, said of the teenagers accused of hanging the boy, these people need to be protected. Mistakes they make as a young child should not have to follow them for the rest of their life. Right. So these kids are 14.
Here's where I would take issue with what the policeman said. Every word of that is wrong.
Every single word.
Every
of
word of that is wrong.
Right. And I get that their identities have not been released. It is standard practice to not release the identities of minors charged with a crime, charged with a crime. And I don't know why we use the word allegedly. For crimes that have witnesses and video footage and clear evidence of the after effect of things. But so these 14-year-olds, I guess, are saying it's an accident that they ganged up on an 8-year-old, tied a rope around his neck, and kicked him off a table. It was an accident.
I'm totally sorry. I tripped and fell into your wife.
Right. Repeatedly.
That's... not an accident.
Right. Which is not funny, but there's a comedy that I watched called Series 7 when I was in college, and it was a spoof on a reality show. And I think we're getting to this point, but it's a reality show where each contestant's given a handgun at the beginning of the season, and they have to hunt down the other members, kind of like Lord of the Flies.
Yep.
And one of the episodes, like, or one of the incidents that happens, like, this man, he ended up in the hospital with... 7 self-inflicted knife wounds to the back.
Yeah,
to the back, right? And so, I mean, that's kind of the same thing here. And the fact that this police chief is saying, "Look, we don't want this to follow these kids for the rest of their life." The parent in me that wants to understand the mistakes that my daughter makes in her life, I don't want those to follow her the rest of her life. That I understand, but the fact that this crime is so heinous. That you're hanging a biracial child. You're hanging anybody. It doesn't even matter if the child is biracial. That just makes a great headline. The fact that you're hanging someone at all, that's attempted murder.
Yeah.
So I don't know that protecting someone from a possible mistake that they made when they were youth is something that a police chief ought to be worried about more so than the life that was
almost
ended. By these 14-year-old boys that he's saying we need to protect. So just a sad story, a sad state of affairs. And this is not the first time that stories like this have happened. Obviously, you've listened to the show. If you're listening now, we've talked about these kinds of issues over and over and over again. But it's kind of, for me, it's almost par for the course. This is another story that I'm going to read here in a little bit that's even more par for the course, just showing that these kinds of things are alive and well in our culture today. But next story?
The next story I'm not going to do because it's about how McDonald's is cheating us out of fries, and it feels super inappropriate
super
right
trite.
Now.
Okay, all right.
Super trite. So what else? Well, I've got a story of, by the way, McDonald's is cheating us.
You know what? I'm okay with light stories to kind of take away from the dark stories every
okay,
now and
again. Well,
so
all right.
I go to McDonald's enough that I need to know what's going on.
Real quick.
I feel like that's a very easy headline.
Apparently, there's a pinching technique that that people are told to use off the, you know, told off the record to use when filling fry containers, where you squeeze them to get a little less fries in there. Here's what I don't understand about this, I'm going to guess, $150 billion company. Julienne fries are basically free. That is, I cannot even imagine why they would try and save money on fries. An order of fries costs about a cent.
Really?
Maybe two.
See, I feel like I'm really getting robbed now.
No, you are. You absolutely are.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. This headline is, I would read that, I read that headline the same way that I read, water is wet.
Okay.
News at 11. Because I think we all have gone to McDonald's enough where, whether it's a small, a medium, or a large, especially on the large.
Yeah.
Right? If I get a large fry and the fries are sitting below the, what looks like a smile, whatever, the rim there, right? I will say, this looks nothing like the picture, right? The fry should be, you know, coming out of the package. I bought a large, right? I bought a large. Could I have a large, please?
Yeah.
Oh, well, they settle. Like, well, they didn't settle in the picture.
No.
And I'm not settling for this.
Oh,
so I have done that. But I don't think anybody is surprised by the fact that McDonald's is skimming on fries. Right? Imagine how much they save.
I don't get fries.
I get fries.
Okay. They're fine.
So, I mean, it's the same deal. Like
a delivery vehicle.
To me, it's okay, hey, you know, those stories, oh, you know what? I robbed a bunch of banks using a computer, and I just stole 2 cents out of every single bank account on earth.
Yeah.
Like, that person's just a gazillionaire now, right?
Sure, yeah.
So same deal with fries. Like, you're probably saving some money by, I mean, how many bags of potatoes are you buying, all those kind of things. So I think in some way, shape, or form, you're saving somewhere.
They're absolutely saving some money.
Even if it's fractions of a cent. Fractions of a cent add up.
Right, but fractions of a cent add up. But I think where you have to consider it is McDonald's is a heavily franchised operation.
Sure.
So it's a series.
What?
It's a series.
Water is wet.
Water is wet. McDonald's as a heavily franchised operation means each individual store, possibly, you know, 2, 3, 10 stores, they are individual small businesses that all operate under the auspices of McDonald's. So even if you own 10 stores, each McDonald's costs, you know, about $2.5 million to open. So if you own 10 stores, you are $25 to $30 million deep in your investment. I have a hard time imagining you're going to even unofficially train your employees to save $200 this year on fries.
Hey, $200.
Yeah.
You know what I can do with $200? Buy my daughter a soccer ball that is actually $200 because it comes with gyroscopes and everything. It's by, I think it's by Adidas. I'm buying it for a couple days.
Gyroscopes in
a
soccer ball.
It can teach you how and where you're kicking the ball, speed, rotation, all those kinds of things. It can give you a bunch of information. It's basically, it's a smart ball.
Okay.
And a lot of sports are coming out with these. There's a smart basketball, there's a smart football. And it originally was used by, you know, the NBA, Major League, you know, Major League Sports, because sports science is a big business. Hey, if you understand how your quarterback is throwing a ball, it's going to make you coach him better, I guess.
I don't know this for sure. I feel like I should have picked this up from context. I feel like maybe I've seen a photo of your daughter in soccer gear.
Mm-hmm.
Is she a player?
Yeah,
okay,
she's a player.
All right.
Right. The problem is, I feel like my daughter is good. I grew up playing soccer.
Sure you do.
I grew up playing soccer.
Okay.
I'm very good. She is good for where she is.
Okay.
But I found out from my wife, I had a tour on Saturday, and so I wasn't able to go to my daughter's tournament. And so my wife went up to the middle of the state and went to this tournament and found out that, you know, a lot of the coaches for my daughter's teams over the years have just been parents picking it up, parents who don't know any fundamentals of soccer or anything.
Yep.
And so my daughter is decent, but every game I have ever gone to, she has lost. Every single game. I don't know if I am the bad luck charm or what,
yeah.
But she's decent, but her team always loses. And I said, you know, I texted her the other day and I said, hey, you know, I heard you lost both games. And she said, yeah, it just really sucks. And so then my wife and I were watching Friday Night Lights, uh-huh. Right? Because my wife turned it on the other day. I was like, all right, we'll start watching this. I've watched every episode. Love it.
So my understanding is that there's some sort of connection between Full Eyes and losing. Full Eyes, Clear Hearts. Clear Eyes, Full Hearts.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically the saying from the show.
Okay.
So we're watching this show, and of course I'm all inspired to be a coach now.
Yeah.
And the only reason I haven't coached her team is because she's so far away. So I just asked her, hey, you know, if I coached you, mm-hmm. would you be open to that? I'm like, do you want to win? She's like, yeah, I want to win. I'm like, okay, I can coach you, but
I want you to know that the difference between your winning and your losing is my coaching.
Hey,
okay,
you have bad coaching.
All right.
So I mean, the difference between a winner and a loser generally comes down to the coach, right?
Okay.
But I told her, I said, you know what? I can train you. I can make you a better player. It is a team sport. So I can't make your team better, but I can make you a better leader. I can make you a better player, better leader, so that you can go out there and you can lead your team, and hopefully you can win some more games.
Okay.
And push comes to shove, next year I'll look into maybe coaching the whole team.
Oh, okay.
But I said, I'm going to go get this soccer ball, and it's going to give me, you know, information on how you play, and the soccer ball will stay with me. It's not going home with you. So if you want to use it, and you want to get coached, and you're serious about it, because she's 15, so you know,
right.
She can change her mind next week.
Not serious about that much.
Right. No. So all that said, I am buying my daughter a $200 soccer ball. So that's what you can do with $200.
Okay.
So if I was that McDonald's owner, I would have $200 extra.
We got there from French fries.
Yeah, from French fries, right. So, which are also being cut out of her diet because, you know.
I would imagine so. My good friend of mine who has been a multiple-time guest on our show, Stephen Phelps.
Yeah, we need to have him back on.
Well, he is unavailable.
Right, because he's coaching soccer,
He
right?
is unavailable to be on the show, at least until, I want to say, through the end of Halloween, because he was unhappy. Boy, I hope nobody, you know, it's okay if he's listening. He was unhappy with the results of his, he has a 10-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He was unhappy with the coaching on her soccer team. And so he said, I'm doing it. And so he is now coaching her soccer team.
What are you doing over there? It's making a lot of noise.
Working a treadmill, working a tripod. And he said, "I'm going to coach." And so I'll tell you this. His daughter's first game is, I think, this weekend. And my expectation, knowing Steve, is they're going to be awesome.
Really?
They're going to be awesome because he is. He is a stickler for physical conditioning, and they may let up a whole bunch of goals, but these girls are going to be able to do laps. Yeah. So.
Of course, he had to finish while I was swallowing some whiskey there.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Good. Just keep it going, Kent.
I ran out of words to say. That was
I guess
the problem.
When you run out of words, it makes it hard.
Yeah.
And. Speaking of having no more words, although I'm going to have enough words to talk about it, even though there kind of are no words, the Justice Department will not charge Baltimore officers for Freddie Gray's death while in custody. So,
and while that's bad, I can't come at it like I'm surprised by it.
No.
Right, yeah.
And,
okay.
this is where I say there are just no words left. I mean, I don't know how what happened in the Freddie Gray case happens. I don't know how all the stuff that happened there, and I'm not going to go over it again, but there is no way that someone in custody in the back of a van should have all that kind of crap. I mean, you shouldn't have your spinal cord injured
right.
while in police custody in a van. There's just no way, while in handcuffs, okay? There is no way, shape, or form. And these cops have already been, quote unquote, exonerated. And the federal case was opened against them. And of course, there's not enough evidence because there's no cameras in the van or the cameras are shut off or whatever. So I'm not surprised. And that's where Kent, yeah, you're not surprised. And that's where I was saying there just are no words left. There are no words for the miscarriage of justice in these United States when it comes to these kinds of things, which is why I get really incensed when the same people who will talk about free speech for taking down a Robert E. Lee statue, and they'll talk about, you know, oh, you know, the Confederate flag, even though I don't like it, it's someone's free speech to fly that thing. These are the same people that will say we need to wait for more evidence to come out in the Freddie Gray case before we can actually make a determination. They're also the same people that are going to look at a Colin Kaepernick who is taking a knee because of police brutality that's happening in this nation and say, well, that's disrespectful to the flag of these great United States. These are the kinds of stories that just make me support a Colin Kaepernick even more. These are the kinds of stories that make me rail against, you know, Confederate flag waivers even more and have a very hard time siding with people, even as a historian, who want to keep up statues of people like Robert E. Lee in celebration of their treason against this country. So not that you should ever be in celebration of someone who committed treason against this country. So this is just one of those things where I'm at a loss for words. I'm not surprised. I try to be hopeful. I try to continue to do this show. Justin and I, last week after last week's show, kind of talked about some of the things that were said on air offline. And he and I get into some tiffs. We get into some tough spaces sometimes because we have differences of views on a lot of different things. And I think that he would join me in thinking that this is a miscarriage of justice. But when we have those hard spots, these are also the kinds of things that, for me personally, make it hard to want to continue to do a show like this, to continue to have dialogue with people who are diametrically opposed. So what I'm saying is there are times where I feel like I'm losing hope.
Yeah.
And this is one of those stories where I feel like the weight of the world has crashed down again, even though it was expected. This story coming back out, okay, you know, the federal case is going on. We knew the officers have been exonerated. The federal case is going on. Nobody's paying attention to it again until the verdict comes out, unless you're directly affected by it. So when it comes back out, it's like the wound, you know, the wound is just ripped back open, you know, and so.
Well, the Justice Department, and, you know, I don't have to remind people of this, I imagine, but the Justice Department, the United States Department of Justice, is headed by a man who was 30 years ago rejected for a federal judge position by a Republican Senate because he's just too racist. So fast forward 30 years and he deserves to be in charge of all of it. He hasn't gotten less racist. And so while this is depressing, it is just par for the course, and this is what we've got for the next, well, I'm hoping I don't know how realistic this is. I'm hoping he gets caught up in the Russia investigation and has to resign. Which is not to say that – which is – there is a high degree of possibility there, which is not to say that his replacement would be any more to my liking, except that there's a chance that he would be less overtly racist.
I'm trying to figure out also – what happened on this ride? Because here it is from the Baltimore Sun. The Department of Justice said the evidence did not show Gray was given a rough ride in the back of a police transport van, a theory of state prosecutors, and did not prove that officers were aware that their failure to secure Gray with a seatbelt, which is the law anywhere I know. You put someone in a seatbelt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put him in danger. Evidence did not show that officers knew he was injured and needed immediate medical care, the Department of Justice statement said. Okay, now, here's the deal on this. When he got into the back of the van, his spine was intact.
Yeah.
When he came out of the van, his spine was severed. Right?
My understanding was essentially internally decapitated.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out what kind of ride he went on where that could happen and nobody touched him. Like everything just came apart, like Mr. Glass in Unbreakable. I don't understand how that is the case. Why he wasn't secured, if he's in handcuffs. And also, evidence did not show that officers knew he was injured and needed immediate medical care. Now, okay, so anytime somebody goes down in football, right, people have gotten concussions. People have gotten their spines severed on the football field. We see the players immediately take a knee, hope he's okay. The paramedics run out there. You immediately know something is wrong. So I don't know how the officers in this case, how many officers were there? What, six officers?
Six.
Yeah, six officers. I don't know how six officers in the back of this van.
They're not all in the back. These are six officers who were involved at some point with the arrest.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll back off on that. All right, however many, there's still some in the back with him, right?
Yeah.
He's not secured. Nobody notices that his spine is severed. Nobody notices that there's something immediately wrong. I don't understand how we're told we need to wait for all the evidence to come out. We need to be logical. We need to think through these things. I don't know anybody who thinks getting into a van with your spine intact and coming out with your spine severed and two people only. We have entire games based off of this. It's called Clue. Who did it? Hey, this right. person walked in and they were this way, and then they have a knife in their head. There's nothing that logically states that you walk into the back of a van, fine, and then you walk out, your spine is severed, you're in handcuffs, and there are only three or four people in the back of the van with you. It would be like
playing a game of Clue, except at the point the game starts, at the moment the game starts, you're told the victim was killed with the candlestick in the conservatory. And by the way, Mrs. Peacock is in the conservatory with a candlestick. Go. It would make Clue a lot easier.
It would. But the story that would come out was not enough evidence exists to suggest that Miss Peacock did this.
No.
That's essentially what we're looking at here. And I don't know why I'm making this a liberal versus conservative thing here, because there are liberals saying, he was murdered. And there are conservatives who are by and large going, well, I don't know.
That's unfortunate.
The justice system has spoken on this. And like I said, my friend Justin, I think he would go there with me on this. But I think a vast majority of people who are on the conservative side are looking at this and all of a sudden becoming very, very, very illogical. I do not understand how 2 + 2 = 5 in this scenario. I just don't get it. It's nowhere. It's almost like 2 + 2 = 63.
Banana.
Two plus. Smell the color 9. That's basically what this is. And
Chris Rice, reset.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you.
Okay.
That was the name of the album.
There was a song called Smell the Color 9.
I know. But that was an old saying. That's where the song came from.
Oh, okay.
By the way. So he wasn't the one who came up with that. Christian music reference. Anyhow. So this is the kind of stuff that makes me unhopeful. Or not unhopeful is not a word. This is the kind of thing that depresses me for sure.
Yep.
And it's sad that this case is reopening a wound. I really wish that we would see justice at some point. But I did see Sean Moore today did post a story of two police officers who were willing to go on record and did a PSA.
Is it Sean King?
Sean King.
Okay, you said Sean Moore.
Sean King. So Sean King posted a video of two police officers who essentially called out the other police officer who had been caught planting evidence on a suspect, which there's no two ways about it, although there's been a lot of video that's come out where there's been no two ways about it and people have gotten off. But we see a police officer clearly planting evidence, and we actually have police officers coming out and saying, this is not good. This person should be prosecuted. He is a criminal. And this is one of the things that I think that black communities have been asking for a very, very, very long time, is if you're willing to admit that there are bad apples among the group, can we admit that this person who did this thing, this person who severed Freddie Gray's spinal cord in the back of a van, can we admit that they are a bad apple? Because saying there's a bad apple and then never admitting that there actually are specific bad apples is paying lip service to the idea that there might be bad cops, but we don't know who they are, when in fact you do know who they are. And so I think that's where the black community is very, very frustrated, is that we know that there are bad apples. We know that there are bad cops among many good cops. We're not saying that we want to get rid of the police. You know, if someone breaks into my house, the first people I'm going to call are the police. That's who I'm going to call, assuming that I don't have a weapon and I've taken care of it myself. The police are the first people I'm going to call, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to call my neighbor. I'm not going to call my pastor. I'm not going to call my best friend. I'm going to call the cops, right?
There's still, in any emergency, your best chance.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that black people think that the cops aren't people who can be called. Dave Chappelle's jokes about calling the police aside. Mm-hmm. But I think that ultimately you have groups of people who are saying that, and by groups of people I mean the police as an industrial complex, saying that there are bad apples, but not ever admitting who those people are. And so when Sean King shared this story today, that did give me some pause and some hope to see that there are cops out there saying, look, yeah, this is bad. This is a miscarriage of justice, and this person should be prosecuted to the highest extent of the law, even if they are wearing a badge. So
I mean, I know in all fair, and we can be accused maybe on this show of coming down as anti-police from time to time. I mean, I know cops, I know white cops who I would trust with my life. Now, all of the ones I have in mind are from my church, which maybe that makes a difference, maybe it doesn't. But I don't have a back half of that statement, but
you know, no, and just piggybacking off that, and then we're going to close out the show
with the worst story of the night.
There was a guy who came on my on a tour. He and his wife came in to town from Philadelphia. I want to say it was Philadelphia, but either way,
West Philadelphia.
No. Wisconsin. I can't remember where he came from, but he listens to the show. I told him that we did the podcast, and he started listening to the show. And he messaged me on Facebook I think it was Facebook. And he just said, hey, you know what? I want you to know that I've been listening to your show, and I really appreciate the things that you have said, especially about the police. Because when he was on my tour, I found out that he was a police officer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a police officer for somewhere around 10 or 12 years, something like that. And he said, this is the reason why some of the stuff that you're saying is the reason why I became a police officer, to be the change that I want to see on the police force, to be that good force, to be the person that people can look to and say, hey, that's a good example of a police officer. Yeah. And the fact that he's listening to the show. So if you're listening right now, thank you so much. And he's even offered to be on the show when we talk about police brutality in the future.
Yeah.
So he's the kind of person when I think of a good cop and the people who think that they're bad cops and will admit that they are bad cops and will name names, he's the kind of person that I think of. So all that said, yeah, like Kent said, it seems like we may come down and say that there are no good cops. They're absolutely good cops. They're the first people we're going to call when something goes wrong. Or they're the people that we want to see walking through the neighborhood so that we feel some sense of security. But the fact that there are bad cops who are defended by good cops, that makes those good cops bad cops, at least in my opinion. But overall, I believe that people who get into the police force want to serve their community in ways that I'm not willing to serve my community. So God bless you, boys in blue. You guys are great. But we need to get rid of the bad apples. That's for sure. All that said, this show is done. Thanks so much for listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Make sure you check out our website, leadingquestionsnow.com, where you can find all of our episodes from the past two seasons and this season, bios, a calendar of upcoming topics, and even suggest topics for us to talk about. If you're interested in bringing our program out to your college, university, or organization, email us at hello@leadingquestionsnow.com, and we will get back to you. To our live listeners, thanks for tuning in. To those of you listening on iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud, thanks so much for subscribing. Please leave us a rating. And tune in next week, where Kent and I will begin our next three-week series called Battle of the Sexes, and we will start it off with a panel titled What is Masculinity? See you next week.